Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
The Jew Menace. The big news this week is that the Jews have very openly and collectively, as Jews, called upon governments everywhere, but especially in Europe, to provide them special treatment, to protect and serve the Jews specifically by suppressing and punishing any expression of whatever the Jews decide to define as anti-Semitism. Effectively, the Jews and their worshippers are calling for a ban on blasphemy against the Jews. They're seeking to criminalize any expression of irreverence, disrespect, distaste, disagreement, or even mere disregard for the complaints and demands that Jews are constantly making. Complaints and demands such as the ones they're making this week, which we're going to critique in some detail. This will be precisely the sort of critique that the kind of bans that they're demanding would make illegal everywhere. Let's start by noting that there are two very specific kinds of blasphemy that the Jews are most keen to stop. The first they call Holocaust denial, by which they mean any form of challenge to or rejection of their version of history, their narrative about the period of European history which used to be known as World War II. The second kind of blasphemy that they want governments to stop is any and all forms of criticism of their ethnostate, Israel. This is actually old news, in that the Jews have been making these same complaints and demands for decades, especially since the war ended. It is a difficult fact for white people to face, even 70 years after the war. Most still will not think about it in these terms. But the white race, all European peoples, were, whatever their nationality and wherever they may live today, lost that war. The Jews won. There is no clearer indication of this than the unrivaled position of power from which the Jews have been able to dictate to whites everywhere what we can and can't say about Jews or virtually anything that Jews feel impinges on their interests, most especially having to do with that war. Thus, it's less and less even referred to as World War II, and more it's called the Holocaust or Shoah, because that's how Jews see it. And as everyone can see now, it's only because the Jews, media, and political power compels it to be that way. The war was all about the Jews. The most elementary point to make this time is that these three things, the Jews, Israel, and their Holocaust narrative, are connected. They come in a package, and it is this way because the Jews themselves insist on it. Yet they also insist that if anyone else makes this connection, it is anti-Semitism. As I mentioned the last time when describing Jew worship and blasphemy and how Jews define the meanings of these words, the double standards that Jews promote seem surreal, almost magical in their effect. But I think it's really just a reflection of their dominance. Speaking of dominance and old news, I'm recording this the night before, but tomorrow is a special day for Jews and Jew worshippers. When this special day was first declared by the UN in 2005, Robert Faurisson wrote a short article about it that he titled, "The UN Decides a Universal Ban on Revisionism." I'd like to read a bit of what he wrote. On November 1st, unanimously and without a vote, the representatives of the 191 nations making up the UN adopted, or let be adopted, an Israeli drafted resolution proclaiming January 27th, quote, International Day of Commemoration in memory of the victims of the Holocaust, unquote. Moreover, the resolution rejects any denial of the Holocaust as an historical event, either in full or in part. Forasan's conclusion, this extraordinary UN resolution also constitutes proof that historical revisionism is a reality that can no longer be bypassed, denied, or played down. Its notoriety has become global. Still, let us take care to recognize that the revisionist researchers who remain active are now but a handful, and with each passing year, their future grows darker. Well, here we are in that dark future, and the Jews are still at it. I think Farisan was trying to be optimistic. But the Jews today are more aggressive and pushing still for more banning, and more directly connecting it to themselves and their Holocaust narrative and to their ethnostate. It's not just about the Holocaust or revisionism, what's going on this week. But let's take a closer look at a few Jews media reports on the menace that Jews have been making of themselves this week. The first is titled Prozar Calls on European Leaders, Take a Stand Against Antisemitism. This was an article in Ynet News, that is Jews media that's aimed at Jews themselves rather than at their worshippers. And Prozor is the Israeli ambassador to the UN. And so this is about the speech that he delivered to the UN at the beginning of their meeting about antisemitism. Let the message echo from the halls of the UN to the streets of Europe to the capital of every nation. Stand for human rights and human dignity by taking a stand against antisemitism, Prozor said. This rhetorical fraud, Jews cloaking their concern for their own particularist interests in disingenuous universalist language, is found throughout their pronouncements this week and all the weeks before as well. It's a constant in what they do and how they do it. But to see just how brazen and transparent this statement is, you simply have to substitute one word. Let the message echo from the halls of the UN to the streets of Europe to the capital of every nation. Stand for human rights and human dignity by taking a stand against anti-Europeanism. Is there even one European politician in power who would claim he himself is taking a stand against anti-Europeanism? Much less one that would lecture the rest of the world that they should do it, that they must do it. The Ynet article continues, Prozor asserted that, quote, the struggle against anti-Semitism must be a priority for every nation because the hatred that begins with the Jews never ends with the Jews. History has shown us time and again that when a nation's Jews are not safe, the entire society is at risk. This is a Jew telling us what history means. The main struggle of the Jews has always been to ensure that the harm the Jews cause others is never attributed to its source, to the Jews. And to do this, the Jews shift the blame elsewhere. In this case, as usual, to some vague anti-Semitism. The argument that Prozor is making here is that everybody else must make it their priority to stop somebody else from even complaining about what the Jews do. And all the Jews have to do is tell other people what to do. History has shown us time and again that the Jews are parasites who infiltrate, manipulate, and ruthlessly exploit other nations, that they have cared only for their own interests, as they have undermined and ultimately brought to ruin and fled every other nation they have ever lived amongst. History has shown us time and again that Jews pose a special menace to hosts who attempt to look after their own safety and defend themselves against the depredations of the Jews. Even those who succeed in reclaiming control over their nation, as the National Socialists did in Germany, find that the Jews never forgive and never forget. In Germany's case, world Jewry declared war in 1933, and they immediately began agitating for the governments of Britain and France and the Soviet Union and the United States to wage war on Germany, to teach them the lesson that Prozor alludes to here cryptically, that when a nation's Jews are not safe, the entire society is at risk of being bombed by other nations that the Jews will inspire to do the bombing. The Jews blame their hosts for resisting them, that they bribe and lobby and propagandize and even succeed in taking control of the host's leaders and crucial organs makes them more culpable and the harm that they cause more insidious, not less. The article continues, quoting Prozor, "Europe is being tested," he said. "We don't need any more monuments commemorating the Jews who were murdered in Europe. We need a strong and enduring commitment to the living Jews in Europe. If the governments of Europe succeed in defending their Jewish communities, then they will succeed in defending liberty and democracy." Prozor cites the Jewish victim narrative here, their Holocaust narrative, even as he's denying it. What the Jews actually want and get is both worship and defense. They get the monuments and the holidays commemorating them, and they get special security. And it's all sponsored by governments and funded by the taxes paid by others. It's Jews telling Europeans what to think and what to do, literally defining liberty and democracy and even success as the defense of Jews. Continuing again with the article, Prozor vowed that, quote, "The days when Jews were the world's victims are over. We will never again be helpless and we will never again remain silent. Today we have the state of Israel standing guard." There's that victimhood again that he's referring to, and this time it's couched in menace. What he's saying here is, we don't need to incite others to war against you anymore. We have weapons of our own now. The article explicitly mentions the attack on the kosher supermarket in Paris a few weeks ago, and it gives the impression that what's happening this week was triggered by what happened several weeks ago. It isn't. The bombing of Gaza this summer was not explicitly mentioned in the article, though that was the actual impetus for the UN meeting, and that's hinted at indirectly in this paragraph toward the end of the article. The meeting was requested by 37 countries who sent a letter to Assembly President Sam Kutesa on October 1st, calling for a meeting in response to, quote, "an alarming outbreak of anti-Semitism worldwide," unquote. They said they wanted a meeting because, quote, "a clear message from the General Assembly is a critical component of combating the sudden rise of violence and hatred directed at Jews," unquote. This simple statement, in both what it says and what it doesn't say, reflects the incredible power and influence that Jews have over dozens of other governments outside the single government that they officially control in Israel. Jews have enough control over the governments of 37 other countries, and most crucially, the U.S., to manipulate them in this fashion, that they could orchestrate such a show of force in response to the murder of four Jews in Paris would be amazing enough. But that's not what it is. It's, in fact, actually orchestrated in defense of Israelis who bombed and murdered thousands of non-Jews in Gaza over the summer. So take in what's going on here. The Israeli military bombs Gaza, and months later, Jews worldwide join with those Israelis to organize a UN meeting to literally shift the blame to, quote, anti-Semitism worldwide, unquote. That's what I took away from that first article. The second article I saw sourced in and discussed in many places. It's originally from the AP. In fact, one of the odd things about this article is that the only references I could find to the quotes that were being made in the article was the AP itself, as if the AP was the original source. I expected to find, since it's a story about a statement from the UN, I expected but could not find an official web page hosted by the UN with the statement. But what the AP article had to say was repeated in many other sources, as AP articles usually are. This one, which was directly on the AP.org site, starts, 40 mainly Western countries issued a joint statement afterward, after this UN meeting, urging all nations to, quote, declare their categorical rejection of anti-Semitism, unquote, strengthen laws to combat discrimination, and prosecute those responsible for anti-Semitic crimes. Quote, the determination to eradicate the conditions that give rise to the Holocaust was a guiding principle among the founders of this organization over six decades ago, unquote, their statement said. Quote, let us rededicate ourselves to that principle and endeavor to eliminate anti-Semitism in all its forms, unquote. I searched specifically for that phrase, declare their categorical rejection of anti-Semitism. And as I said, all I could find was the AP story itself with that quote. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But I want to note in response to this, the unequivocal, uncompromising language in trying to compel others to serve the Jews, to declare their categorical rejection of anti-Semitism and to eliminate anti-Semitism in all forms. The article continues, in the keynote speech, French philosopher Bernard-Henri Lévy said, blaming Jews is, quote, once again becoming the rallying cry of a new order of assassins, unquote. Lévy, who is Jewish, called for new arguments to counter anti-Semites who say, quote, Jews are detestable, unquote. These anti-Semites call Israel an quote, illegitimate state, unquote, deny the Holocaust, and believe Jews give far too much attention to Holocaust victims and stifle other people's martyrs, including the Palestinians, he said. Dozens of speakers echoed his call to address the root causes of anti-Semitism, as well as wider religious intolerance, hatred, and extremism. So I think this lays it out pretty clearly that it's the Jews trying to dictate what others are permitted to say, not only what to say, but what to be detested about. It's detestable. And the Jews are detestable for doing this. Lévy offers no arguments, and his call for arguments is disingenuous anyway. The whole point of the UN meeting was for Jews to make public their demands, not to argue, and it amounts to telling everyone else that they must reject, prosecute, eliminate blasphemy against the Jews. Lévy is one of the many Jews who unambiguously connects Jews to Israel and to their Holocaust narrative. Near the end of the article, it says, France's Minister of State for Europe, Harlem Desire, urged the world to act, quote, with the utmost firmness wherever anti-Semitism rears its head in the world, unquote. Quote, without the Jews of Europe, Europe would no longer be Europe, unquote, he warned. Harlem Desire, which is his real name, is a Semitic-looking mulatto. The premise of Desire's argument is that the world, and especially European governments, should be more worried about what's best for the Jews than what's best for Europeans. The world, and especially European governments, should see a Europe without Jews as unthinkable, but literally not think at all about what Europe would be like without Europeans. A host can survive without a parasite. A parasite cannot survive without a host. Jews, without the wealth and security that they've wheedled out of Europeans, would cease to exist. That's their fear. That's why they equate expulsion with extermination. Europe, without the parasitic load of the Jews, would thrive, as Spain did after expelling its Jews in 1492, and as Germany did as well in 1933 and in the short years before the war. Desire called for a new legal framework at the European Union and internationally to address the diffusion of racist and anti-Semitic speeches and material. This is needed today, Desire said, to, quote, put the responsibility on those passing the message, unquote, such as Google and Twitter. This is the closest thing to a new argument that was offered, though it's really just the same old methods applied to new technology, new forms of communication that they want to restrict. The tactic suggested here is to leverage the influence and power that the Jews already have over some governments in some places and couple it with the influence that they have over certain internet corporations in order to impose the priorities and interests of Jews over and above everyone else, everywhere else, all at once. They're tired of dealing with individual countries, individual governments, individual corporations. And that's why they're going to the international level to make this push now. The final article I'll discuss, and I might have to cut it a little bit short here, it's really just more of the same, but it really makes it explicit that it's the Jews that are behind this outside of the UN even. It's an article from The Guardian titled, Jewish Leaders Call for Europe-Wide Legislation Outlawing Antisemitism. It starts, European Jewish leaders, backed by a host of former EU heads of state and government, are to call for pan-European legislation outlawing antisemitism amid a sense of siege and emergency, feeding talk of a mass exodus of Europe's oldest ethnic minority. Let's decode this phrase that they used, Europe's oldest ethnic minority. Ethnic is a euphemism for race. An ethnic group is a genetically and culturally, in other words, racially distinctive group. The oldest ethnic groups in Europe are Europeans, not Jews. Jewish roots, genetically and culturally, are in the Levant, not in Europe, on the border of Europe, outside its boundaries. The Jews have quite consciously preserved their distinctiveness from Europeans for more than two millennia while living amongst Europeans. The words minority and exodus allude to the Jews' victim narrative. And the use of the word exodus in particular is a reminder that it stretches back to Egypt far more than 70 years ago and outside of Europe. The fact is that the Jews, whomever the host among whom they live happens to be at any point in time, see themselves, organize, and operate as a collective. This international lobbying, using their influence over some governments to influence other governments to, quote, combat antisemitism, unquote, is a perfect example of this. The fact is that the Jews have collectively imposed themselves upon virtually every European nation at one time or another They have infiltrated, manipulated, and exploited Europeans, moving about and concentrating physically in each and every place that Europeans have ever been or have ever gone. Today, they're manipulating Europeans collectively via the EU. Europe's oldest ethnic minority? No. The Jews are the oldest and most hostile alien interlopers in Europe. The Jews have parasitized Europeans who have for millennia now served as their primary hosts. This is another fact that most Europeans don't want to face. The article continues, a panel of four prestigious international experts on constitutional law, backed by the European Council of Tolerance and Reconciliation, have spent 3 years, so this wasn't an instant thing, this has been a long time grinding away, 3 years consulting widely and drafting a 12-page document on, quote, tolerance, unquote. They are lobbying to have it converted into law in the 28 countries of the EU. The proposal would outlaw antisemitism as well as criminalizing a host of other activities deemed to be violating fundamental rights on specious, religious, cultural, ethnic, and gender grounds. So this is essentially an echo of the demands the Jews put forth at the UN, but it's aimed more specifically at the EU, and it's been going on for even longer than the October timeframe when the UN meeting was scheduled. But it also indicates the long-term premeditated nature of the effort, and it comes with these fleshed-out, ready-made answers to the demands that the Jews made at the UN and here. The article continues, these steps would include banning the burqa, or these things that would be banned. It's not clear really what the article was saying about this, but these would include banning the burqa, female genital mutilation, forced marriage, polygamy, denial of the Holocaust and genocide generally, criminalizing xenophobia, and creating a new crime of, quote, group libel, unquote, public defamation of ethnic, cultural, or religious groups. Women's and gays' rights would also be covered. This is the traditional grab bag approach that Jews have taken. Their victim narrative generalized and extended to other groups outside themselves, disguising their concern for their own interests by wrapping them up and conflating them with the interests of others. It's not clear from this that whether they want to ban burqas or ban the banning of burqas. I don't really care, because whatever it is, it's subject to change depending upon what the Jews who run the show demand at some future point. The article has a little bit more that I could comment on, but you know, I think I've made my point. They talk about tolerance and the freedom of expression, but it's really as defined by the Jews and the interests and security of the Jews. That's what this is all about. And it's also another reminder, amidst all the disposable universalist platitudes, that it is the Holocaust narrative, the Jews as victims of Europeans narrative, that the Jews themselves provide as justification for the contempt and hostility that they so constantly and freely express toward Europeans.